When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
What's up? I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week.
We sure do.
So let's kick it off talking about Planet of the Apes, number one from Marvel, written by David F. Walker, art by Dave Wachter. This is like Alien and Predator, Marvel's big push into yet another 20th Century Studios property, in this case, Planet of the Apes. It is jumping back in time to showing us the beginning of the ape plague as seen in the more recent movies, and then jumping even further back in time year by year to show us different parts of how things came together in different aspects. I don't know if you guys are fans of the Planet of the Apes movies, what you thought.
I'll tell
about
you what, I don't like those apes taking over.
Oh.
And, you know, wrecking the Statue of Liberty, like we told them we don't want them doing that.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they're doing
get
that.
Your damn dirty hands off it, etc.
Yeah.
Nice.
You did it. You really did it.
I once had a birthday, and a friend of mine wanted to go see a Planet of the Apes movie instead of what I wanted to go see. So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of Planet of the Apes. But I tell you what, I love this comic.
Is that me?
Yeah, that's you.
That's the movie that I went and saw.
What did you guys go see? Rampage
or
something?
I went and saw Hercules, and he went and saw Planet of the Apes.
Oh, you made a bad choice, Pete.
Yeah, exactly.
He made a bad choice.
The important thing is we hung out for 5 minutes like friends before we both went to our separate theaters.
That's right, like true friends, letting each other do what they really wanted
Happy
to do.
Birthday.
I think that's a great friendship. All right. Anyways, I thought this was a great comic. I liked the way it started. I love the art style. I thought it was, I really left the part with the soldier and the play using the sign language with the apes was really cool when she was kind of like talking with the apes. I thought that was so powerful and very cool. I thought that was like a really great connecting point that made me want to read more.
You know what this reminded me of? World War Z. It's like taking the Planet of the Apes world and looking at it through with a World War Z style.
Which ape was Brad Pitt?
All of them, they were all very handsome apes.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. He actually is drawn in underneath the masks of the ape masks.
Makes sense.
So I thought that, I like that take. I like that sort of seeing the world since the movies have really focused on particular characters in different situations. So seeing it sort of a wide lens, I thought was really cool. Let me also say, it occurred to me, it's strange in the new Planet of the Apes movies. The apes, once they sort of like have the real sentience and they want to take over, they immediately start riding horses. Mm-hmm. And there are cars. There are cars.
Why do they go to horses? The gasoline doesn't work
anymore.
What
are you talking about, dude? If you're an ape and you see a horse, I mean, come on.
If I was an ape, I'd probably ride other apes, I think.
Yeah, that's like your closest friend. You're like,
I'm a smaller... I would jump on eagles. I'd try to be doing everything.
Jump on eagles.
Yeah, jump
eagles
on eagles.
Eagles aren't that big.
Well, some of them are pretty huge.
Well, okay. Well, I feel like the sane one suddenly. Okay.
Haven't you ever seen Lord of the Rings? Those birds are huge, man.
Yes, I've seen Lord of the Rings. The documentary, you mean, Lord of the Rings, right? Yes.
Yeah, it's all about New Zealand.
Really glad they took care of that ring, by the way. That seemed like it was going to go very badly, but. Anyway,
I was hoping I was going to get my hands on it because I bet I could talk. If those ring wraiths showed up, I would have talked to them.
Oh, you can talk to them?
I want
to
negotiate. Plus, I can handle. I can handle the pressure of the ring. I just put it on in my pocket and be fine. Walk up to Mordor with it. Walk around. Go to work. Whatever. I'm not sweating it.
When Justin does just walk into Mordor, the. I was surprised about this book, particularly based on what I was expecting from the Alien and Predator books, which Philip K. Dick Johnson on the Alien book just pushed it forward in this wild way and explored different aspects of the mythology. The Predator book by Ed Bryson also really pushed the story forward in a big way. This instead is looking backwards. So it took me a little bit to kind of get into it. And I think World War Z is a very good comp there in terms of taking it to literally this planetary scale of we've always focused very narrowly on a, you know, one place where the apes are. What actually happened to the entire planet? What happened to all of these people? And we still get an emotional hook by the end of the issue that I was into. But again, it took me a while because it was not what I expected, but that's not their fault. The art was great.
David fucking Walker, man. He's really just
that's what the F stands for.
That's what the F stands for. Little known fact. It's David fucking Walker writing this.
It's a family.
The shit out of it.
It's a family name, just so we're clear. He's from the traditionally from the fucking.
I'll tell you what. This is one Planet of the Apes I don't want to get off. Next up, Poison Ivy number 11 from DC Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Marcio Takara. This is continuing the story arc that finds Poison Ivy using her evil spores to accidentally take over a goop-style commune. This is great. I'm having such a great time reading this book.
The art's unbelievable. I mean, just super tight bananas, even though it's kind of got this tripped out feel to it, which is very enjoyable, but really sets this kind of sinister tone for Poison Ivy. And I've been having a great time with this book. It's been going back and forth between being like super sweet, but also crazy dark. So I'm having a good, I think they're doing a great job on it.
Agree. I feel like this story feels both like sort of story of the week or an arc type comic book writing, while at the same time really touching on some big points for Poison Ivy and the other characters that have sort of become part of the family here. And I really care. I'm invested in the choice that Poison Ivy has to face here. Like, is she somebody? When we started this book, she was trying to kill basically everyone. And now she's grappling with the fact that it's gotten away from her. Is she here to sort of help the people that are now in danger, or is she fine just letting them go? And it feels like a real decision for her.
Star Trek Deep Space Nine, number one from IDW, written by Mike Chen, art by Angel Hernandez. This issue is dealing with two wildly different stories. In one, Sisko is grappling with the idea that there might be Borg tech somewhere inside the space station. What does he do about that? On the other side of the spectrum, Quark falls in love with an adorable corgi.
Come on, it's corgi love. This is space corgi love here. It's so adorable and so well drawn. It's really fun.
And Pete, when is your erotic novel coming out, Space Corgi Love?
I'm working on it still. You know, I got to get a lot of
vocal. We went back to the drawing board, started over.
Got to go through a lot of, it's got to go get a lot of okays before you can kind of put it out
there. Yeah. Pete's been doing a lot of research, like hands-on research to like really get the details just right.
Yeah. You got to. That's just good writing, especially when it comes to corgis falling
and now,
in
Pete,
love.
Pete, semi-related, but I believe back in the day you worked as a human sexual dog.
Nope, not true.
Well, and just I know you're wondering, because we don't want to laugh about this, because this is a real thing that Pete did. He was a human sexual dog, which is a man that dresses like a dog to have sex. We've talked about that a lot on other specifically our podcast about Preacher, the TV show Preacher. We wanted the full story from Pete LePage's lips to God or Jesus's ears. But let's talk about this book. The Deep Space Nine. It's funny. I've been talking about these Star Trek books. We've been talking about them. How they're these like all star squads getting everyone together. And this one feels like they are not taking it seriously. And maybe it's because it's Deep Space Nine, which is a little bit of a catch-all of the television Star Trek universe, where they would have very serious stories. They would have these sort of oddball, like, Northern Exposure-esque storylines in that show from the Star Trek universe. I think it's fun that it has this weird angle on it with the corgis.
It's the Quark corgis side of the book is so much fun. It's so good. And yeah. Just Quark being like, no, I hate this corgi. What are you talking about? No, well, you can just stay in my room tonight. the most fun you can have reading a story about this. It's absolutely ludicrous. But then it's such total whiplash when you go to these scenes of Sisko being like, the Borg! But, you know, worth picking up if you like these characters and you want to see an adorable dog running around a space station and just frolicking and having a good time.
It's just funny. This is a number one issue with a Deep Space Nine comic book series launch. And there's all the main characters holding a corgi on them as well. It's insane.
Yes, it's great. I love it, though. Good for them. It's audacious. Radiant Pink, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Megan Kamenrena and Melissa Flores, art by Emma Kubert. Moving from dogs to giant cats in this issue.
Yeah.
Radiant Pink and her new, I don't want to say girlfriend, but they're kind of hooking up a little bit, who was previously her villain, have been captured by giant cat people who have them under attack. There was, I talked about this a little bit, like I found the second issue a little bit wobbly, but it got back on track with issue 3. Issue 4, loved it. Just had a great time. Very fun with all the cat attack stuff. Back on Earth, we're getting stuff that's tying into the rest of the Radiant Black universe, which I found very interesting. I thought this was great.
I'm curious.
I agree. Go ahead.
Sorry, Pete. I'm curious. We talk a lot about how the Massiverse is coming together in some larger story, right? Soon, we think. Like in the next couple of months, probably, right? This is when it's going to kick off. This issue, which I also liked. I think it's cool. I like these characters. I like the tone of this. These books have such wildly different tones. I'm curious how they're going to sew all of this together.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're going to do a great job with it because they have already been doing a great job with it, and I can't wait. But to get back to the cat action in this book, just absolutely, I love the line that, hello, ugly alien friends, just really fun. Loved all the kind of love story stuff, but also the kind of fight sequences with giant cats. It's hysterical, but also they're doing a really good job of building out this world and kind of establishing relationships. I agree with Justin. There's different style tones, there's different art styles, but it does fit under this umbrella. And I'm really impressed with how big they're making it and how afraid they are to get away from certain things that have been established as far as like style or tone or kind of things. So really impressed with what they're doing here.
It truly is massive. But let me ask you, Pete, if this book had a giant corgi in it and the Deep Space Nine book had a cat as the focus, would you have liked them better? Would you like the Deep Space Nine cat story better?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe. I mean, the corgi story was very touching, but this had a darker side to this. And we're also going to be talking about another big cat issue later.
Yeah. Cats on the brain.
I don't know which one you're talking about. Oh, I know what you're talking about. Okay, why don't we move on from cats to spiders? Spider-Man number 7 from Marvel, written by Dan Slott, art by Mark Bagley. This is an issue that Dan Slott has been hyping up online for a good long time.
We found out
the reason for it. This is the end of this end of Spider-Verse storyline, which is bringing together all of the Spider-Mans and Spider-Womans and girls and et ceteras to fight against this giant wasp lady for the fate of the Spider-Verse. In last issue, they cut Morlun open and spilled all of the spiders that he's ever eaten out. So everybody is back. Everybody comes back, including Spider-Woman, in a big triumphant way. But the big spoiler here, which again was put out online, so it's not much of a spoiler, is we're getting a new character that Dan Slott has created called Spider-Boy, who is Spider-Man's sidekick, who nobody remembers, but he has always been there, is basically his thing. So we're going to find out more about him in subsequent issues. But what did you think about this? What did you think about the issue? Ed, what did you think about this end of the Spider-Verse storyline?
I feel like there's no better. It's almost like a Disney ride. If you wanted to pay a couple bucks, get on a little roller coaster and take a tour around the inside of Dan Slott's brain, that's what this comic is. This issue is a million different spider people just showing up, bouncing off each other. Everyone's like, I have something I want to say. I feel like this is actually what Dan Slott, every time he closes his eyes to go to sleep, he has to put to bed every single spider person in this book. So that was fun. Spider Boy, I should have written down who posted this, but someone said this Spider Boy should clearly be the spider that bit Peter Parker, who got the powers of a boy from that. And I thought that was really smart and sort of tracks with the issue when you read it, because he's like, I've always been with you. Mm-hmm. So like I think there's a case, and he has like a little more spidery, his mask is a little more spider eyed. I think that could potentially be the secret here.
Pete, what did you think about this?
Well, I agree with the original statement that Justin was saying, that this is just Dan Slott fun action. I mean, there's a lot of hilarious lines in this thing. I was just super impressed with all the details and everything kind of coming together here. It was it's just a lot of fun. I'm trying to find it here. Oh, yeah, the noir Spider-Man saying it's good to have your kisser, good to see your kisser, and the walloping web snapper, just fun stuff. This was just a kind of giant big issue, and had Slott's fingerprints all over it, so it was a ton of fun.
Totally agree with you guys. I want to throw out one line, and this is, I guess, a spoiler, but it is Dan doing exactly what you're talking about. It is the pinnacle of maybe the worst, most brilliant pun I've ever seen him do in the entire time I've been reading comics, where over, and I'll spoil it here, so if you don't want to know, turn away, but everybody's been fighting. Miles was turned into a wasp person. He's not there in the final fight. Finally, he shows up driving the spider buggy, and they're like, whoa, where were you? What's going on? They're like, sorry, we had to Tokyo drift through a bunch of different universes to finally get here on time. And they're like, wow, that's amazing. How did you do that? And the spider buggy says, that's because I'm the best parallel Parker, which is a joke that I read and like, literally my head dropped, being like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, I can't believe he built that up just to that moment. But hats off to you, I guess, is what I would say.
that is the compliment that you're giving him. it's all there. I feel like this is Dan Slott's, to quote Pete, Dan Slott's happy place.
Yeah.
All there the action go. Figures, you put a quarter in the Dan Slott and you get every Spider-Man action figure.
All right, let's move on to talk about The Joker, The Man Who Stopped Laughing, number 7 from DC Comics, written by Matthew Rosenberg and Ryan Keating. Art by Carmine D. Giandomenico and Will Robeson. Batman is lost, as we officially establish in this issue, seemingly somewhere in the multiverse in another universe where Bruce Wayne has died. The Joker is not the Joker. He's just a regular dude wearing a red hood. Everything's a little different, but of course, Batman got a Batman and tried to fight his way through it. And then the backup story, Tim Drake Robin is looking through the multiverse for Batman. What's up, Justin?
That's the Batman issue that we're talking about in a minute. This is Joker.
This is
the Joker coming.
Ridiculous. I'm sorry. There's two Jokers. That's fine. I don't know why I did that.
Well, we're talking about like four Batman books.
Sorry. That was a total brain floop. The Joker comic book, he's in Los Angeles. He's fighting his way out of Los Angeles, which is like a parallel universe. And the Joker is like the opposite of Batman. And the Joker, who I mentioned earlier, is there's two Jokers. So there you go. So that's what I was saying, and I was right.
To be fair, you got halfway through that, and I was like, well, this sort of checks out in a way.
Anyway, Joker's fighting Manhunter throughout this issue, and the backup story, we get the Joker running for president with another double Joker twist going on. This title continues to be great. Yes, what's up, Pete?
I just think that this was really an impressive issue. I love the art style. It is just so cool. And it was also an interesting start here. We kind of started with a Manhunter. I loved the fact of the Joker back and forth with the Manhunter, like, who are you? And then calling her the evil tomato later, and just the whole, like, him being a tourist in LA and wanting to try animal style and doing, like, and the whole just kind of running bit of, like, there's no heroes in LA and that's why you come to LA. And he was, like, so disappointed. It was just, I had a blast. I felt like they nailed the tone and the humor of the Joker in such a interesting way, and the art style really fit it, and I was just super impressed with it. And also, yeah, I love Manhunter, so this was really in my wheelhouse.
Agreed. This had the fact that it sort of was rooted as a Manhunter story, I thought was really cool, where it sort of advanced her story in a way which I haven't seen in a while. But shouts to Berge, our guy Berge, because I was talking about how there aren't a lot of Joker stories that are actually funny, where the Joker is being funny, and the Joker is being legit funny in here.
Yeah.
And hilarious. I love all the mayhem, all the LA commentary is really fun. I love how there's a line that, like, why is everyone trying to take credit for, like, greasy burgers? And I'm like, that is absolutely right. That is a part of culture. I'm like, it's sort of all the same burger, though, right? We're all cool with knowing we just like eating this gross flat burger. It tastes great.
Don't think about burgers like that, all right, dude?
I'm not saying
hold on. Just real quick about burgers, because I'm going to forget later. Accurate to In-N-Out, like very accurate In-N-Out conversation, yeah. Whatever you think about In-N-Out, like it's still, that's the conversation people have. There's a book later on in the stack that we're going to talk about where the characters go to White Castle and they're talking about White Castle, but they're not eating White Castle burgers when they get there.
Wow, look at you. It was an absolute takedown. But outside of all this fun and mayhem and great fight scene, there's a great full page spread here with the Manhunter defeating the Joker. I won't say how. But there's this underlying mystery of this second Joker that Solomon Grundy is like petting, of mice and men style. And we've talked about how we think that's the real Joker and how this is Joker someone else. And I'm starting to think there's something else going on here. This page ends with saying, well, we're dead. And now I'm starting to think it's not at all what we anticipated. And we're going to get like a double twist back here. So that's exciting as well.
Absolutely. Very excited about this book. Let's move on to a very advanced review. Lamentation number one. This is coming out May 3rd from Oni Press. It's written by Cullen Bunn, art by Arjuna Sassini. Won't get too much into spoilers here, but basically this concerns a woman who is auditioning for a theater troupe. The theater troupe is not what it seems, and some dark things are going on here. I'll just say nobody is doing horror right now like Cullen Bunn.
Yeah, the guy is all about it, man.
Yeah. But he's also, like, beyond the fact that he's doing these really great horror comics, he's writing things that feel like classic Tales from the Crypt style stories, classic Outer Limits, Twilight Zone style stories. And that's really hard to do without feeling derivative. Something like this that finds this new riff on haunted theater group is so smart. The art by Arjuna Sassini is so creepy. God. Like there's panels where it just cuts to, I'll spoil one little thing, but like there's so a panel scared. Where it cuts to her talking to the theater troupe and there's these things crawling over the seat behind her. Made my skin crawl.
Yeah, it really creeped me out. The art on this is just phenomenal and creepy in all the way right ways, and also the kind of like the theater teacher is also creepy in all the right ways. It's really a really well done book, a great combination of both writing and art. Sorry, go ahead, Justin.
Pete, I believe she's the director of this particular production. Okay. So let's just get our terminology straight. As a classically trained actor here, I will step in and the director of this. What I was going to say, though, Alex, to your point, I think it's the depth at which Cullen Bunn takes on this task. I feel like a lot of horror stories are sort of like premise, and then they're a bit surfacey. It's caricatures instead of characters. And this, I really feel like both the writer and artist here really dig in. We get a visual motif to like sort of bring us into the acting experience here that we're getting blended with the haunting experience that we're just sort of learning about. we get to meet our character. There's some nice tonal stuff in here, and then just full on mystery. It really is just, it feels super well thought out, and I really liked it.
Again, that's coming out May 3rd, not this Wednesday, so look forward to that. Love Everlasting, number 6 from Image Comics, written by Tom King, art by Elsa Charettier. This is picking up after the last issue, where he got some big revelations about what's happening to our main character in terms of her falling through these different romance comics in her life. In this issue, she has basically given up and said, all right, whatever, do whatever you want to me. Sure, I'll fall in love. And yeah, I kind of went into this thinking this is the last issue. It's not. It's going to keep going from here. I'm fascinated to see what's going to happen next.
It really is becoming this riff on what love is in short time frames and long time frames, like marriage. Why? Like, I think Tom King may be saying here that, like, love is a momentary thing, but all the ways we talk about love are forever. And the tension between those two ideas, because this woman is trapped in sort of an infinite loop of short love stories. So she's always falling in and out of love, and it always burns out in her. But then she has to find love again with the same people in different timelines and places.
I got to say, though, I've been on the other side of this, and it's a little frustrating when somebody says
the other side.
Well, I'm getting to it. Jesus Christ. Okay. I'm just saying it's a little frustrating when someone says they're in love with you and then you think you're going to be in love forever. And then they're like, hurry up and kill me so I can get on to the next love story. And you're like, all right, fine, I guess.
Wow. I can't believe it took us 16 years for Pete to confess to murder here on the podcast. That's surprisingly.
That's the power of comics. That's the power of comics.
It's really
anyway, fun. Just don't dig up any of Pete's earlier apartments.
Oh, by the way, Pete is exclusively lived in underground apartments. This book is great. The art is great. I love it. I cannot believe it's continuing, but I'm actually excited that it is because I'm really fascinated to see where it goes next. The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kid series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
Agreed.
Speaking of which, another ongoing book that I'm really fascinated by, I Am Iron Man, number 2 from Marvel, written by Marella Ayodele, art by Doton Akande. This is another sort of one-shot focusing on an aspect of Iron Man. Here, essentially, he loses most of his power and ends up under the water, communing
under
with a
sea.
psychic whale, I guess. I think it's a whale.
Yeah, I guess a meteorite crashes and this whale gets some powers from it. It seems like is what's happening.
This is a stunningly gorgeous book and a fascinating Iron Man tale that I guarantee you have never read anything like this before. I'm loving what they're doing here.
I completely agree. This is it's such a chill vibe to this comic. It's really beautiful. It's sparse as far as like the talking and all that. It's really art-focused, art-centered. It's super tight bananas art. It's really this kind of magical adventure you go on Iron Man that's very different from a normal Iron Man story. I had a great time. I love the whales. I feel like, that's probably how whales talk to each other and stuff. So I was all in.
Psychically, you think?
Yeah, definitely.
So what do you think all the whale song is? Just like burps and farts?
Well, it's for us to throw us off. You know what I mean? They're constantly fucking with humans, yeah.
Oh, it's like karaoke, and then they're like, look, the humans think.
Yeah, they think this is how we talk, and they're just kind of farting under the water.
Nice. Great marine biologist take there from Pete LePage. I agree. I love this book. I think Iron Man, I actually like the run that's happening right now in the other Iron Man, the main Iron Man title. But I feel like so many Iron Man runs like run out of gas on the premise where I feel like usually you have to take a big swing at Tony Stark. It's like he runs his corporation, but he loses all of his money or his armor is trying to kill him. But it's hard to sustain that over a series of arcs, I feel like, at least in the recent past. But getting Iron Man stories where they're like sort of one-off, like interesting universe with the where the rules are a little different, really here for it. Really liking this series.
Well, and I'm forgetting exactly what they say in the back matter here, but a lot of this is about loneliness and isolation, this tale, which is something that you don't really deal with in an Iron Man story, but he is literally a guy who's wearing armor. And in this case, they take him to the darkest, loneliest place imaginable, which is deep, deep under the ocean. You're reading
it. Well, let me read it, because it's actually, it's even a little more specific than that. This episode was written and illustrated for and is dedicated to everyone whose body betrays them, whose body has kept them away from their dream lifestyle, or whose body has caused them frequent hospital visits. Do not give up. Keep fighting for life. Like Iron Man, defy Mother Nature one day at a time. Much love. And it's the writer and artist who put that message together. And the story is about there's mention of like the Iron Man's losing power. If he loses power, his heart dies. Like it really, I think it does a good, the story does a good job of putting a metaphor on Iron Man with that, the details of his heart and that we know from his continuity, but also the feeling of what I think they're describing in this passage at the end in a great way.
Batman number 134, from DC Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Mike Hawthorne and Miguel Mendoza. In this issue, the Joker is on the loose in Los Angeles. He's just trying to get to the airport.
It's not this one. What's going on? It's not this one.
Oh, okay. Oh,
you bastard.
Oh, sorry. No, this is actually the one where Batman is in an alternate universe, and then in the backup story, Tim Drake is trying to get him back to travel through the multiverse. I gotta say, I still think there's going to be some sort of twist here in terms of what's going on, but loving what they're doing. It's really just pushing Batman to the limit. It's pushing Tim to the limit. It's great.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up, Pete?
Hey, I had a hard time with the helmet strap look with this Batman. I didn't
How's he
like
keep
it.
The hat on his head, though?
Yeah, but I appreciate the fact that it's a different Batman, it's a different world and that kind of stuff. So there's a stark difference between the Batman I know and love and then this one, but the helmet strap really had a hard time with it, and it was like it kept me at a distance.
He had to build the bat suit himself. He didn't have Alfred's help.
That was just like a skateboard helmet.
This is a fact that not a lot of people know, but Alfred actually makes all of his suits out of soup. They're soup suits made out of bully base. That's why it has that flowing look over his body. So when he makes it himself, he has to build the strap in because Alfred isn't there for the soup suit.
Soup suit.
Soup suit. Right, Pete? Pete, soup suit?
Yeah. Soup suit. We went a long way on that one.
I'm just trying to match up to my idol, Dan Slott, and his parallel Parker joke.
All right. Well, good luck. Keep trying.
We'll get there. I thought this was great. I think the front story.
You like
with
the backup
all of,
better than the front story.
Well, let me get there. Like I do like that. Chip Zdarsky feels like everywhere he's writing now, he's creating these whole events in single titles. And this is fun. We get some like scary takes on the heroes that have been polluted by the non-Joker in this universe that he's in. Great fight with Ghostmaker. The backup, where Tim Drake's trying to chase down Batman in whatever multiverse area he's in. And part of the technology that takes him there, he has to think about Batman to get him there. And out of nowhere, we get this little bit of the story, emotional hit, where he's like, my heart betrayed me. And he goes to another multiverse where he sees his mother, who has passed in the main DC continuity. And he has this great like two-page hang with her. And then he's off to find Batman. I just loved the surprise, emotional gut punch of the story. And it was just a fantastic Tim Drake Robin story that caught me totally off guard.
Great stuff. Let's move on and talk about Disney villain Scar, number one from Dynamite, art written by Chuck Brown, art by Trevor Fraley. I'll tell you what, when I added this to the stack, I was like, I'm going to hate this. I don't really like The Lion King that much. I'm sorry, I just don't. This is going to be stupid. It was very good. It was a really interesting exploration of Scar leading up to The Lion King, this character that feels shunned and beaten down by everybody around him. It builds out the world in a really fascinating way. My one quibble is I think Trevor Fraley draws Scar a little too beefy, like he's a little bit too much of a beefy lion. He's not like a skinny lion. But other than that, I was surprised to be into this book.
It's a very interesting little side note there.
Yeah, this is the other cat book.
This is the other cat.
This is the other cat book that you were talking about, Pete. This is a cat.
Wait for it.
Yeah. Oh, this is it. That's what I thought it was.
Nope.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about.
Alex, if you don't know now, then you've truly lost
it. No, I got it.
Oh my God. All right, I guess we'll see. You think it's Wolverine?
100% seriously. That's what I was. I was gonna do that joke later.
You took the bit away.
I know what he's talking about. Just real quick, the thing is that, like, legitimately in The Lion King, even though I don't love that movie, the idea of Scar is he's hungry, like he's physically and mentally hungry. So you've got to see his bones. You've got to see his skin hanging off a little bit. So in this book, the fact that he's like, I'm a beefed out lion like Mufasa doesn't quite work as much for me in terms of the character, but it's fine. Anyway, you guys take it away.
It's weird that they're fleshing out the Scar backstory in this book. And you know what? This is a little bit talking about the story, but I find it to be a betrayal that Rafiki's chilling with Scar and helping Scar out.
I was kind of like, Rafiki, what the F are you doing, bro?
Rafiki, your whole thing is you should be a little bit distant from this sitch.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I was like, Rafiki, cool. Whose side are you on? Why are you helping out Scar? I felt very betrayed by that part. Also, I was just kind of like, okay, I guess if we're going to do like, you know, Darth Vader gets his own title, then I guess Scar gets his own title. And I was just kind of like a little bit like, why are we doing this? But I, you know, the art pulled me back right into it. I hate Lion King as much as other people. But yeah.
You hate Lion King?
No, I said I don't hate Lion King as much as other people because Zalvin went on this whole diatribe. Why are you even listening when we're doing this podcast? Anyways.
Here's the thing. They did it better and it was called Hamlet.
Oh my God.
Wow. What a take.
Wow. Anyways, yeah.
Shakespeare didn't need lions or songs from Elton John. Come on.
It's true. He did not. His Elton John, he just was like, nope, singing, sir, Elton from the 17th
century. But I've got some great songs about just waiting to be king.
Nope, Elton. Right. Note Elton John's great, 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 great grandfather.
Sir Elton John, also Elton John. Elton John is also Sir Elton
John. Justin, do you have anything more you want to say about this book? Or?
Yeah, by the way,
I was mostly caught up in the betrayal of Rafiki.
Okay. Right. We're going to talk for the next half an hour about this book. You know what? I'll tell you what. Why don't we move on and talk about another king? King Spawn, number 21 from Image Comics, written by Sean Lewis and Todd McFarlane, art by Javi Fernandez. Now, this comes from a listener who said, hey, why are you guys not talking about King Spawn and the other Spawn books?
Yeah.
This popped up, and I was like, all right, we haven't talked about this for a while, so let's talk about it. I'll tell you what. There's some super gross stuff involving brains in this book. And if you're into horror and you're into brains being ripped out and draws of brains, and spoiler, the last page is Spawn being like, okay, here we go. And he's carrying brains in each hand. It's pretty gross and awesome.
It's a lot of brain stuff.
It is. The brain stuff was super gross, but the art was glorious. I really had a great time with this book. I also thought the kind of like last panel was such a classic kind of Spawn action moment. So I was very excited about that. Yeah, I think this is it continues to be an interesting book and done well. And, you know, sometimes you got to fight dogs. Sometimes you got to feed them brains. You know what I mean? You got to figure out where you stand with dogs. You know what I mean?
Oh, what's your move on that? Do you feel like you throw the brain?
Well, you know, in a tight spot, you know, either carry pork chops in your pocket or be ready to, you know, because guard dogs are, you know, they're
and
not
you do that anyway, right? You just walk around with a pork chop in case you get hungry.
Yeah, or you know, run into a guard dog. You got to be ready.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it has multiple uses. Well, yep. But I guess what I would say is if you have brains or like brains, pick up King Spawn number 21. Moving on to talk about...
It is weird that he has the brains at the... It's like, it feels like the brains is the product almost here. It's like he's like, use brains for the dog and then hold on to your brains for the end. You might need a new brain over there. It was like, is he selling brains? It's like you see Pepsi in a movie. It's what it felt like.
Product placement for Big Brain. I get what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. Big Brain.
Captain America, Sentinel of Liberty, number 11 from Marvel, written by Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly, art by Carmen Carnero. In this issue, after a big sacrifice in the last issue, Captain America and his friends are fighting back against MODOK in all of his forms. He's taken over New York City. And as usual with this book, there are some big, wild splash pages going on, some huge action, and also some emotional moments for Captain America. I love everything. Clearly, I love everything in this book. I don't know.
You did. You stopped short. Almost yeah, like a catch in your throat.
It was. This is a great time. I mean, I'm loving the action. I'm loving the emotional moments with Bucky. The MODOK having an spoilers, but having a little MODOK in his eye socket. Saying that out loud seems insane, but it looked really cool in the comic, which was impressive. So, yeah, I'm having a great time with this. This continues to be a heck of a comic that you must pick up because they are killing it.
It's sort of a weirder Captain America story that's just really well told. We've got like a team of ragtag invaders around him. Bucky's sort of the bad guy. He's in a way infiltrated this like secret Illuminati style organization, but he seems to have bought into it, at least to some degree. Last issue, a member of their team died, and there's some emotional resonance there. The only part, I don't know what Cap's romantic situation here is.
Mm-hmm.
That part, I'm like, is that actually happening or is it not?
I think it's actually happening. So, spoiler here, but towards the end of the issue, Cap asks Sharon Carter, it's Sharon Carter, right?
Sharon, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. To move into it with him. And she's like, of course, you dumb nerd. Of course I'm going to move in with you. That wasn't built up very well for the previous issues at all. So I don't know what happened there. It feels like it's picking up on some storyline that I didn't read, you know?
Well, and maybe that's just that the status quo is that he's with Sharon, and mm-hmm. I've just never seen it happen. I've never seen the chemistry. It's always just like, what's happening? So I would love to hear, and again, like this isn't a criticism of this book, because I love this book, but I want to see an arc, a full-on like Sharon Cap loves book, love story. Mm-hmm.
That would be great. Cool. Fables 158 from DC Comics, written by Bill Willingham, art by Mark Buckingham. And this issue, our wolf children are all grown up and fighting against a bunch of folks. Pete, you were super into this. Take this away.
Team Ham here is just absolutely killing the game. It's so great to have.
That's us. We're Team Ham, right?
Nope.
That's our nickname.
Buckingham and Willingham is Team Ham. Asshole, pay attention. So,
we're doing that eating contest where we have to eat as much ham as possible. What are we calling our team then?
We're Comic Book Club. We're still Comic Book Club, guys.
We're going to stick with Comic Book, even though we're eating ham?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Right.
Feels like a missed opportunity. People know
we can't change our name for an eating contest. It doesn't make any sense. Anyways,
we're gonna do the eating contest though, right?
yeah, we are.
We have to do it. We signed up.
And I'm gonna crazy about a ham to prep.
Yeah, I'm gonna beat both of you. Mm-hmm. Anyways, my point being,
real quick, let's just go through what our nicknames are, because my nickname is Honey Baked. What's your nickname?
That's a great
Spiral is my nickname. Anyways, if we could please focus.
You guys got a lot of ham knowledge right off the top of the dome.
Yeah, I mean, come on, man. It's almost Easter. You got to be ready for ham. Anyways. Yeah.
So, Justin, your nickname is Bone In. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, that's on the back of my jersey, but I'm shank you very much.
Oh, wow. Anyways.
Shank you for listening.
The panels here, the little just side panel stuff, I just love it so much. The attention to detail, the splash pages, these giant monsters that come to life in this story. It's just, it's so magical and great. It makes me feel like I'm a kid again with those kind of stories. I can't get enough of these. The fables are just so great.
I guess I'll go with Hawk if you're horny. What I love about fables is they always find a way to put their characters in jeopardy and high stakes situations that feel scary. And we get it again here in the back half of this book. Also, they take the time to construct their villains in a way that make them the central focus of the story. And that here again, we've just established this guy who is now terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. Junk Rabbit, number one, from Image Comics by Jimmy Robinson. This takes place in a future world where most of the world has been covered by junk. There's a rabbit out there, and the rabbit is killing people in the junk. What do you guys think about this book?
Well, I mean, first off, the rabbit, you know, we get this, you know, spoilers, but sick splash page at the end. But I'm excited for this. I feel like they do an interesting job of setting it up. I like the art style. I like this kind of world that they establish. And I'm excited for more, and I'm hoping this rabbit's going to fuck up the bad guys. You know what I mean?
Is this the cat book you were talking about?
Nope.
Oh, great. I'm curious. We meet some characters. We establish the world. One of these characters is the junk rabbit, right?
Yeah. I feel like anybody? It would be the rabbit at the end. Yes.
No, I know that, but the junk that has a mask on. So we meet some sort of young team.
I see what you're saying.
You're right. Alex, I will say I did spot the rabbit. I knew.
It was super clear.
When it came to who the junk rabbit was, on the cover.
Can you spot the rabbit?
Oh, no, they don't.
No,
check inside and find out.
Nope.
So, like, I feel like I didn't get to know these characters enough to be invested in which one of them is the rabbit. The world seems interesting. A lot of junk. Very, almost a Wall-E level of garbage in this world.
Oh, yeah. Nice reference.
Yeah. And Mayor Eric Adams was talking about that in New York, right? That we're almost at Wall-E levels.
Yeah. Of junk. I know. Love that. Who's here for the Eric Adams takedown that we're bringing?
Yeah, it's great.
He also speaks a lot like Wally. I think he has a Wally voice.
And here's one that I am super excited to talk about.
Yeah.
I'll just take it from here. Thanks, Alex. Yeah, so this fake Wolverine comic is a fucking shadow for a Beast comic where it's a fucking...
Hold on.
It's basically Minions with Wolverine and Gru is fucking Beast. It's fucking bullshit.
You're gonna get your chance. You're gonna get your chance. Absolutely. Wow. I have been excited to hear from you legitimately all week about this book. Wolverine number 32 from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Juan Jose Rip. As revealed in the last issue, or the last two issues, I guess, Beast really is seemingly the villain here. He is saying that he has the best interests of Krakoa at heart. X-Force is not strong enough. He's got to out X-Force by taking down the foes of Krakoa. So he has separated a giant skull beast island off of Krakoa that is
pretty
filled
sick
with multiple beasts and multiple brain dead Wolverines who he is using to attack the enemies of Krakoa. Meanwhile, Wolverine has kind of figured out what he's doing. That in this issue confronts the Quiet Council and is being like, what have you shitbags let Beast do, you absolute idiots? So there is a conflict brewing, but we also get to see Beast go directly for Maverick, classic 90s, 2000s X-Men character who is stealing drugs and flowers from Krakoa. So lots of stuff going on here. Pete, I know you're holding it in, or you didn't hold it in at all.
Didn't do that.
Take it away. Give me your rant.
This is really upsetting. I don't understand who this is for or why we're doing this, but we're having, you know, mom and dad fight here. And I don't like to see Beast and Wolverine fighting. I like it when we're all on the same team. I also, you know, I appreciate growing a giant organic skull body as much as the next guy. But then having like little Wolverines come out of the hands to be claws is dumb. I can't enjoy it because of being used like these mindless minions, and I can't abide by it. It's just upsetting.
I'm sorry, Pete. I know we talk about opinions on this show. Beast piloting a enormous skull mecha under the ocean that pops out claws that are Wolverines is unequivocally cool.
Nope.
There is no question about that. That rules.
No, it doesn't. It's cool. A fucking evil beast doing evil shit against Wolverine and against others. And it's very upsetting. I can't enjoy this because I'm so fucking angry about what's happening. Because
you love Beast.
Just sit around going, this is a nice island. Yeah. Fuck all of this.
Wait, because you like Beast, you're saying, and you don't like him up to no good.
I enjoy Beast as a character very much. I also enjoy Wolverine as a character. And it's just, I don't like this butting heads for whatever reason that we don't know. We're not privy to what's going on. We just have to sit here.
On 420, you know what I'm talking about.
Hey, man, I don't know what impression you're doing, but I don't fucking appreciate it. All right, Cornell? Why don't you put your fucking finger in a socket and do your hair, you fuck? Listen, this is upsetting stuff. You're having a Wolverine title that is fucking Wolverine. Why would you change the title?
House of X and Powers of X was a Wolverine title that was fucking Wolverine.
We haven't seen it yet. That's what Hickman's coming back for Sex Moon. Sex Moon is going to be the art.
I've got this really big idea. It's a porno.
Let me ask you, Pete. It makes me so mad reading this and the fact that I can't enjoy this giant skull island that moves.
Let me
just say the one positive thing. The art is great. Okay. Thank you, Justin. Great. Go ahead.
We talk a lot about this issue, but I think we can firmly say when it comes to this skull island, this island fucks. That's for sure. Secondarily, Pete, do you get upset? Like, what if I told you I had like 7 Wolverine action figures here behind me and I'm just letting them do whatever they want over here? They're just over here either doing stuff that Wolverine would never do. They're coming out of an island monster hand like claws. Does that bother you when my action figures are doing stuff?
Nope. You can do whatever you want with your action figures.
Because here's the thing.
This is supposed to be for us, the people who love Wolverine.
Wolverine's in this book, and he's pissed. I have a feeling in the coming issues, you're going to see him cut up a lot of Wolverines. A lot of Wolverine action
Hopefully
figures.
Beasts.
He's going to kill a lot of Beasts. He's going to kill a lot of Wolverines. Yeah. It's going to be awesome. I'm waiting for it to start being awesome.
Because right now, it's just watching your parents fight, and that's not awesome.
Your parents are Beast and Wolverine in this analogy?
Right.
Okay. Yep. I look forward to seeing them and explaining to them, looking at them and being like, which one of you is Beast and which one of you is Wolverine?
If you met my parents, it would be very clear.
Great. Good to know. Your mom listens to this, right? The thing I was also going to say is, like, I like this. I like that this feels like Benjamin Percy is taking all the stuff on the table and being like, here's something that's weird with it. Because so much of it is like, yeah, the X-Men all just resurrect. And then that's just the status quo, and we just don't ever play around in there. And I appreciate that this book, since Percy took over, has been playing hard in the Wolverine universe and getting us to a place where you got Beasts and Wolverines like punching a clock like they work in some big office building, but that building happens to be a walking, swimming island.
I also think this is great. I also think
the art is great. Go fuck yourselves.
Okay. Sorry.
I will do that.
Yes, myself as well. And I think, you know, when that porno finally comes out from Jonathan Hickman, We'll all see ourselves fuck ourselves. Batman and the Joker, the deadly duo, number 6 from DC Comics by Mark Silvestri. In this issue, Batman and the Joker have finally met the villain of this series, a bride who self, I don't know, heals, replicates, whatever you want to call it. And she is creating a bunch of evil Joker clones to take over the city or destroy the city or something like that. Basically, she's a vengeful bride character. You get the gist. And Batman and Joker finally do, in fact, need to team up to take her down in this issue. What'd you guys think?
Well, I'm a sucker for Mark Silvestri art. I just think he's such a great artist. I really thought it was very cool when Batman put that key around his neck and was like, come and get it, Joker. So, I was geeking out big time on this. Worth it for the art alone.
And that's sort of the mystery we have is, like, what is that key and why is it so important to the Jokester? I agree. This art is really fun, and I like the use of all the characters here. I don't know what the point of it is, but Batman being like, I can't believe I'm teaming up with this Joker, but I really need his help here. And then I'm gonna catch him real good. But then most of the time he's like, Joker, run over there, hurry up. It's like, so I don't quite know. There's a little bit of tension there. I don't know how those two things are gonna coexist for almost any longer than literally where we are right now.
The two things that I'll mention in opposite directions. One, I think the design of the villain here is very good. Like, it's clearly thought out as, oh, this could be a new Gotham City villain that we use in different aspects. So I like that quite a bit. On the opposite end of the spectrum, the way that Mark Silvestri writes this Batman, he's very resigned to letting people die, which,
yeah,
I know is realistic and whatever, blah, 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 but I'm reading comic books and Batman doesn't let people die. And just the idea that he's like, oh man, Joker only killed 100 people this time. All right, got to keep working with him.
That's a win. That's a win for Batman. Only 100.
Yeah.
Chalking him to a W.
It doesn't sit well with me. It makes me very uncomfortable, but overall, yeah, after some janky parts at the beginning of this series, I think it's really rocking and rolling. And it's just like very high octane 2000s level Batman, which is fun to read. Let's move on to a book called Hairball, number 1 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Matt Kidd, art by Tyler Jenkins.
Justin, this is
a book about a bunch of humans that live in a house, the end. And let's move on to the next book, which is Blood Tree, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Peter Chit. None of you are going to stop me.
Well,
you know, we're on the train, I just like to ride. You know what I mean?
Okay. Well, we actually talked to Matt Kidd about this on our live show a couple of months ago. He had some really interesting things to say about this terrifying horror book about a cat that is living in a abusive household. Pete, you're our cat expert. Take this one away, please.
This is really hard for me because I love cats, but this cat is clearly very fucked up, and the eye thing really freaks me the fuck out. Love the art, but yeah, I'm very scared. The jumping to the kind of interview portion is creepy. And I'm really worried about who the hero is, and hopefully this kid is going to be okay, and hopefully this cat isn't going to kill her, even though she like bit her, and I don't know, but it's very intriguing and very well drawn, and you know, cats are mysterious and creepy.
Would you let your cat, a cat that you had, read this book?
No, I don't think I would. I would wait maybe to see more about what happens before I let my cat read it, just because I don't want my cat to get the wrong impression of what I think of cats or what is okay. Because if, you know, cat saw that it would, you know, bit a kid and maybe think it was that was cool, I don't want them thinking that. Him.
Yeah. What do you let your cats read?
Oh. no, mostly my fanfic, you know?
Shakespeare. Oh, cat fanfic.
Yep. Yep.
Let me say, Pete, that is almost the weirdest answer you could have said. Hey, I wrote this about you, cat. I love you. Read this. It's about you. We talked about this book. It's really scary. I'm surprised it's an ongoing, because I feel like it has all the sort of airs of a one-off horror story. It tells a great story. The character is really cool, and I think it makes a great point. So I'm curious how much more story we're going to get.
Blood Tree, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Peter J. Tomasi, art by Maxim Simis. This is following two detectives who are tracking down a killer who is dressing people up as angels and leaving their bodies places. In this issue, they make a big breakthrough in the case and also a big breakthrough in absolutely wrecking the way that White Castle looks. I think that's the big thing we got to talk about here. I know I brought it up earlier, but those are not White Castle burgers, man. Like. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. I understand.
You can't do that.
You can't do it, and it breaks the reality of the book, and I'm done with this book. I'm not reading this comic anymore.
Wow. I respect it because if someone was like, could you draw some White Castle burgers? I'd be like, well, I certainly don't want to go there and eat them, so I'll just guess close.
What are you saying, dude? White Castle has phenomenal burgers. They're absolutely delicious. You got to get them steamed. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
What is your favorite food to order in a sack? By the sack, I guess. Is it just White Castle?
White Castle is definitely up there, for sure.
I would think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always get a sacks of caviar.
Dude, I used to get the suitcase. Are you kidding me? Dude, the fucking suitcase was the thing back in the day.
Suitcase?
Yeah, you get a whole Crave case, bro.
That's when you want to die. That's when you're like, see you later, world.
Would you take that to business meetings or what exactly?
Yeah, the parties.
No, that's the briefcase.
Okay. Anyway, I am joking because I actually do think this title is very good. It's good mystery. They're writing these detectives at the top of their intelligence, which is, frankly, not an easy thing to do, particularly for mystery comics. The mystery is interesting. They're definitely on the offensive here, which is great. So good crime comics. This is really well done. White Castle stuff aside.
Yeah, I agree. White Castle stuff aside, I think we get like a lot of information in this issue, which is great and kind of gets you excited for more.
I guess we should start every podcast with White Castle stuff aside and then get into our reviews because it's sort of a nice catch-all.
I would like to start talking more about White Castle, actually. I have a lot of fantastic White Castle stories.
What do you think about the chicken rings, Pete?
Oh, man. You know, until you eat them, you have a lot of thoughts. You know what I mean?
That's and made up, though,
like,
right?
Oh, and then afterwards, you have no thoughts.
And then you just like, delicious chicken.
They're chicken anuses? Is that what we're talking about? The chicken rings?
Yeah, they're deep fried. Steamed chicken anuses.
No, only the burgers are steamed, bro. Come on.
Oh, okay.
Steamed hams. I like this comic, and I think that it does a great job of switching the perspective to the villain a little bit, which gives us some nice extra tension. I feel like we're barreling toward a confrontation, which I'm excited for.
Scarlet Witch, number 4 from Marvel, written by Steve Orlando, art by Sarah Pacelli. Here we are breaking the done-in-one format of the previous issues to finally reveal what is going on with this universe's Darcy. Turns out she basically attacked, I want to say, whatever the Marvel Universe version of Themyscira is, and tried to...
The Bakai is the group.
Yeah, there you go. But that's what they are. I mean, they're a bunch of Amazons. We find out a lot more about that as Scarlet Witch battles them. We're going to continue into the next issue. What do you guys think about this?
This is great. Love the art style. Love all the action. The showdown kind of battle is really cool. I mean, she gets hit with a fire hydrant, which you don't really see much, which was really badass. That kind of was, I was like, oh, shit. Super tight bananas art. Have a great time with this.
You don't really see the water come out once the fire hydrant's used as a weapon. I'm surprised by that. Love the art, Sarah Pacelli's art. And like I've been hyping this book a lot. I think it's great. Exploring the Darcy side, I think, is fun, but I'm excited to get back to our status quo of Scarlet Witch and the door and all that fun stuff. But I do understand we need to learn more about Darcy. She is sort of a little bit the bad guy. The bad guy here, though.
What
so
are you
I'm curious.
About? You watch your mouth.
She is. She killed someone. We sort of land on that it was in self defense, but like, just feels a little like, oh, okay. And then we're gonna whip back to her, and she's back on the hero side. So I'm curious. It's definitely setting up a more nuanced character than I thought.
Where Monsters Lie, number 3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Kyle Starks, art by Piotr Kowalski. This is following a town, or more of a cul-de-sac, let's say, that is filled with serial killers right out of slasher movies. There is a cop who's coming straight for them. It's all gone to hell as of the last issue. And here, the cop goes on the offensive to take these serial killers out. There's some twists, there's some turns, there's some hilarious, gross, bloody moments. Pete, you seem pretty psyched. Take it away.
Yeah, this is like a number one Pete book of the week right here.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where I wish we would have had the writer on to talk about how great this
Pete,
is.
Pete, we did. We talked to Kyle Starks about this book on our live show.
Oh, that's great. That's great news. Anyways, I just think that this is a lot of fun. First off, the art is really fantastic. Does a great job of capturing all these crazy kind of bad guys. And what I like about this is it's not just like a horror thing where it's like scary, fucked up. They do a great job of like giving you hope and being like, oh my God, maybe they're going to be able to be. And then just like this, that last panel was like, oh shit. So I just feel like they're doing a great job of balancing. So it's not just all scary all the time. But man, it's a ton of fun. You're rooting for the good guys. But also I love the line of that kid getting caught again. And it's just like, fuck every part of my life. Yeah, it was just such a fun line.
It's funny to me that you are so down with this because you don't like scary stuff. But this is like, to me, nonstop horrifying violence.
Well, but that's the thing, though. We also have good guys fighting against them in a way that's like, you know. So, through my fingers, I'm rooting for the good guys and hoping that they can win.
I love to see that. One guy picks up a lawnmower in a surprising place, I thought.
Yeah.
I found that to be a surprising way to.
You have a lawnmower behind you right now, right?
I do. And I would pick it up by the handle. This guy has other ideas.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Adventures of Superman John Kent, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Clayton Henry. In this issue, John has been recruited by President Superman and Red Tornado, who is his mom in another body from another universe, to help try to take down Ultraman, the version of Superman that kept him trapped in a volcano for years. So it's personal. This time, there's a big twist by the end of this book that takes us further along the road to injustice and the crossover with the main DC universe. What'd you guys think about this one? Justin, you want to start?
Yeah, I love this. I mean, this book it's going on a much wider trajectory. And I know Tom Taylor talked a lot about sort of what we were getting into here, and it was going to be a little bit bigger than we thought. And I think it's really paying that off. I also find it interesting that between this and the Batman book, our sort of main DC heroes are mostly away on different multiversal planes, lost, basically. So that's an interesting sort of synchronicity, I thought. And the Lois stuff, both Lois in the real world, talking about what it's like to be in a romantic relationship with a hero, seeing that play out, I thought was great. And then the Red Tornado Lois, also sad and emotional with what we see with what happens there.
Pete, what about you? What do you think about this one?
This is really, really crazy and intense. I mean, I love the art style. I thought that was very cool. There's kind of like a nice, almost like airbrush feel to it, if you will, a softness, if you will. This is really cool. And I'm not sure I'm fighting with myself on whether I should spoil what's happening, but I definitely out loud said, oh, shit. I was very surprised by what happened in this issue. So
that sounds like a good, that's a positive thing.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Hell to Pay, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Charles Soule, art by Will Sliney. In this issue, we are flashing back to find out about our villain for the series and what his origin story is. What'd you guys think about this one?
Great. I thought that just the actual text that Charles Soule is writing, especially at the beginning, talking about like money, what money means, and then we just follow this journey. It's almost just a standalone comic about someone struggling and trying to find their place in the world, and how money and greed and capitalism just slowly turn them into someone who's willing to do anything to achieve their goals. And I really like that.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of dealing with this creepy skull man and making deals with a devil type character, which is never a good idea. I don't know why this keeps coming up. Apparently people are making deals with devils, but don't. It's not going to go well.
As long as you talk it out with a devil, I've never had a problem.
Like, no. I feel like
never had a bad
in the
deal.
History of deals, there hasn't been one that was like, all right. You know what I mean?
Well, no,
like,
you sign your name and then the scroll rolls up into his hand. Then he smiles and laughs and licks his lips and licks his fingers and then vanishes. And I've never had a problem.
Really? Never had
so
a problem.
So far. So far.
I sold my show to co-host a mid-tier comic book podcast for the rest of my natural life, and that didn't turn out badly.
Surely that wasn't the devil, though. That was some, like, middle management demon.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a guy painted red. I do know that. Like, he was red in the face.
You said he was painted red? Because the devil, I think, is red.
No,
I
made a mistake. I made a big mistake.
Was it at Comic-Con?
Yeah, it was at Comic-Con. Ah, geez. The Amazing Spider-Man number 23 for Marvel, written by Zeb Wells, art by John Romita Jr. In this issue, Spider-Man has been sent out of this alternate reality that he and Mary Jane were trapped in. He is desperately trying to get back to her and clashing with a bunch of Marvel heroes in the process. Justin, I know you love this one, so take it away, please.
I'm really loving this run. This was like almost like Crank for Spider-Man. He is just racing through the world trying to get his way back to Mary Jane. He can't get there and struggling. He's willing to punch anybody, and I mean anybody, in the face at this point. And he knows what's happening. We already know what happens down the line. So the tension is there, and when Peter Parker's really under the thumb of the situation, that's when I find him the most, I just need to watch it.
Yeah, Romita Jr.'s art is just worth it alone. I mean, this is just absolutely beautiful, very cool stuff here. I'm very nervous about the other shoe dropping in this book, where we're going to kind of get some answers about the MJ Peter situation, and I'm scared about what's going to happen.
I think we know what happened. Watch out. What happened in the other dimension? Making a baby. You know what I mean?
I mean, I don't know. And I'm scared to find out.
Well, okay. We're going to find out in issue 25 and 26. So you have at least a little bit of time of that.
I'm enjoying it.
I'm going to be a real jerk.
Send you some drawings. I'll send you some drawings, Pete.
I got to say, thanks. I normally love John Romita Jr.'s stuff, and I think he does generally good art in this book. The way that he draws bruised Peter Parker occasionally here is like looking at a Picasso painting, and it's very weird. It is maybe my least favorite thing he has done since Gorilla Grodd over in Superman, which looked like some sort of Yeti or something like that. I understand this is very rude. He is a legend. He does great work.
Thank you. He's a legend. How dare you, man?
But it's weird. There's some perspective stuff that is just incorrect in this book, and it stuck out to me.
Yeah, no, that's fair, because it does look like a little like the lump is just floating. Like I hear you on that, but the pace of the story and the speed at which the drawings are rendered, it feels like it syncs up for me, and I like that.
Selvin, I'm sorry, I just wanted to check. Are you the kind of asshole who would just go walk up to the Mona Lisa and be like, "Oh, it's small."
Is she smiling or she's not smiling? Like, make a decision. You know what I'm talking about? Just,
I say throw some soup on that. Throw some soup on that painting. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Put on your soup suit. Put on your soup suit, Mona.
Stillwater, number 18 from Image Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Ramon K. Perez. This is the final issue of this title for now, where finally we find out what is going to happen to the town where nobody could die. Turns out it is a knocked out, drag out fight where people repeatedly not die in the worst ways possible. And there's a big change to the world at the end that promises that maybe they're actually going to revisit this world at some point. How do you guys feel about how this all tied up or not in this case?
I'm curious if they will revisit this world, because I think it could be cool. To me, I like this series, especially the first half. And then it got a little bit like sort of a lot of characters, a lot of things happening. And it was a little hard to follow the individual plot points, I thought. And plus, everything had to be like big meetings between big people. And it was always like, okay, take him to the edge of town where he can die. Like, oh, let's just kill him over here and bury him. Like, it just felt a little like the backbone, the narrative backbone got a little bit wobbly for me in the middle. I really like where it ended, though, and I'd be curious for more.
Yeah, I mean, Stillwater, the town where nobody dies, it's an interesting idea, and I think they did a really great job of exploring it and pushing it and kind of like doing a lot of crazy cool things with it. I love the art style. The kind of stuff that happens in this issue was intense and amazing. But then the ending where it was kind of like, I was a little like, wow, you know. Overall, I was super impressed with everything.
So the ending was a little, and you were a little.
Yeah, exactly. But okay. I still had a great time. Check out more.
Yeah, the Jesus metaphors were laid on pretty thick in this particular issue.
Agreed.
Yes, but at the same time, I agree with you, Justin. I think they really went for it with this series. So whether you agree with the direction or not, they were taking chances and they were pushing it, and that's appreciated.
Let me just say one more thing. This feels like a movie. Mm-hmm. That they then turned into like a TV series. Like there was a little bit of padding, I think, as the story continued on. When if this was just a tighter package, like the 18th issue?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. If anything, I think it felt like there was a fair degree of improvisation that was going on here at a certain point, which is fine, but it maybe led to that meandering nature of the story when it is something that I do think, whether it's Chip Zdarsky or otherwise, could change it into like a killer movie, like you're saying. Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. Or a one season limited series TV show. Either way, Mosley number 3 from Boom Studios, written by Rob Gilroy, art by Sam Lofty. In this issue, our main character, who is a dude who hates AI and got a big old hammer, is going after the gods of this new world. Pete, go.
This is for you.
I love old dude who's got a hammer and doesn't mind, fucking shit up. So, yeah, this was definitely in my wheelhouse. The art style is fantastic. Love the character design, especially the villains. And the hammer was so cool. I also love the kind of like, the God Killer seeking another scalp was such a cool villain line. I had a blast with this. Action was glorious and cool story.
We talked about in the previous issues the mix of like myth and high-end tech sci-fi. Mm-hmm. And I think they're doing a good job of mixing that, especially when it's like through the lens of like big old fights with swinging hammers. You know what I mean? And that's what we get here.
Yep, absolutely. I hate this place, number 7, and also that's the name of this comic. Image Comics. Hey-o! Written by Kyle Starks. Right,
maybe you should talk to somebody.
Ooh, art by Artyom Topalin. In this issue, our two main characters who have inherited the worst farm in the entire world have been captured by the cult leader that raised one of them, and they are fleeing to the woods to get away from them. Of course, the woods is every horror imaginable. Another great issue of this book that is wildly, wildly creative and awesome. The end.
Aww.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I've really been enjoying this. I'm curious, again, where it's going to go, because we've had like a lot of people showing up at this house being like, well, we're going to kill you. And then the ghost situation sort of helps them or kills the bad guys. Are we just going to keep getting murderous people from their past? Because I feel like we're getting close to exposing some of the mysteries of the every horror situation all at once in the surrounding areas of the house. So I'd like to get a little bit of taste of that, but still more fun run and hide type adventures here.
Yeah, I'm having a fun time with this. I just think the art style is very cool. A lot happens in this issue. You know, the devil character showing up crazy looking, a lot of fighting, which I appreciated. It continues to be an interesting book.
Breath of Shadows, number 3 from IDW, written by Rich Dueck, art by Alex Cormack. In this issue, our band, who has been traveling into the heart of darkness, meet the Marlon Brando in this situation and find out some weird semi-mystical things are going on, as well as more centipede horror. How'd you feel about this issue? Justin, we'll go to you since Pete was scared.
You were scared, Pete, because you don't like all the bugs. But the bugs are in the news. I mean, you got Blue Beetle, Spider-Man.
Oh, dude, can't wait to talk about that.
Ant-Man. It's all bugs. It's all this. All, hey, this business. Listen, kid. This business is all bugs. Write it down.
Bugs Life.
Yeah, Bugs Life. Obviously, ants. Mm-hmm. Alex, shouts to ants.
I'm the youngest in the... Too tired to do it right now. I'm sorry.
I love that we could say the word ants and you'd be like, well, clearly they're calling for my Woody Allen ant. And
that's
you do it.
There's that's nothing controversial about that at this time.
Oh, boy. All right. Let's
No. What a, time. What I was going to say, though, before, you're still scared.
Sorry.
In this
situation. Were you going to say? Were you going to say, up here, they all look like ants? No.
He's got a bag of tricks, I'll tell you that much. I like the art. The tone of this feels like the horror is right there. I'm a little confused about how the relationships work because everyone gets in a fight about the woman with them. And I was like, who's she's dating one of them? The other one likes her or like doesn't like him. Like it was a little bit hard to track that stuff. But when the switch fully flips and we're into the full horror nature, I think this book is going to really come alive.
Well, yeah, speaking of come alive, there's plenty of bugs that are creeping and crawling and grossing me the fuck out. There's no way I would kiss anybody in this fucking nightmare of a book. You got to be kidding me when they stopped to have a kind of smooch. I was like, get the fuck out of here with this. There's no time
for
anything.
I'm going to call you out on that. That is 100% not true. If a hot girl in the jungle, even if there's bugs around, was like, hey, Pete, you want to make out with me? You'd make out with her.
Well, there's a difference. Well, first off, you know, I don't like how you set any of this up, but, you know,
it's true. You don't like the truth, Pete?
No, I just think, there's a time for love and then there's a time to run for your fucking life because you're in the middle of surrounded by creepy ass motherfuckers everywhere. So, you know.
Well, we're going to find out what happens because we got an all-expense paid trip for you to go to the deepest, darkest heart of the jungle in South America, and there's a lot of love waiting for you because you're the next Bachelor.
Wow.
I'll tell you what. I would watch The Bachelor if they let them loose into the jungle with horrible centipede monsters.
Okay, ladies, you've got a glass of vodka tonic and a rose, and you gotta find that man in here. He's somewhere in this jungle.
Yeah. Oh my god, wait, no, that's a great idea. Like, not to pitch something on this podcast, but a dating show called Heart of Darkness where you send bunch of singles into the jungle to find the guy that they want to be with.
Hero's journey.
Amazing. Wow. That's great. We came up with it. Well, I guess that's it for the podcast.
I think it's called Survivor. I think they already kind of did that, but all right, man.
No, this is legitimately a great idea. I'm going to pitch it to HBO Max tomorrow. Almighty, number 3 from Image Comics by Edward LaRoche. In this issue, our main character, well, there's two main characters, one who is on the run, the other one who is trying to take her on the run. In this issue, we have an all-out fight with the cops where she just slaughters a ridiculous amount of cops. This is a big action issue, and I think they drew the action and they paced out the action very well.
I like this book a lot. The action is great. The art style like reminds me of sort of like early Image, like Invincible. If Invincible and Walking Dead met right in the middle, maybe something like that. I think it's really good. And the mysterious character here who can take some damage but also can wreck everything, I like her. I like where we're headed.
Yeah, I love the art and the action. It's super intense, but a lot of fun. So very cool.
Last but not least, Koshki in Hell, number 4 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Mike Mignola, art by Ben Stenbeck. This is wrapping up the tale of Koshki the Undying, who kind of died the last issue, but of course didn't completely die because he's in hell. And he goes through a very dreamlike state and a bunch of different states over the course of this issue until, big spoiler here, he reaches a sort of peace by the end, which I thought was very interesting and very satisfying.
I agree. This is number 4 of 4. I had a blast with this story. This is very much...
and it's published by Dark Horse Comics. Did you know that it was written by Mick Mignola and the art is by Ben Stenbeck?
Yeah, it's cool. We're recapping all the same things again. This is fun.
We got to recap it.
Sorry that I wanted to bring up it was 4 of 4. I thought it had a good kind of 4-issue run that I enjoyed all the issues. It really felt like a cool Hellboy comic with, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but old Koshki. But I just felt like,
it's not what I said.
Yeah, I know it's not what you said. And I said, I didn't know how to pronounce it. So I wanted
that
to
I said
it.
And you could have just said it the way that I said.
I could have, but I don't agree with you. And
put
I don't
it to bed.
Want to
go back to the locker room with both of you. You're out of the game.
All right. Well, I tried, but anyways, I felt like, all 4 of these issues were very interesting and cool. And, it was a fun 4-issue run and I was happy about it.
I agree. This felt like we're slowly getting closer to a Hellboy series in style and tone. This is the closest, I think. Even the other issues that feature Hellboy, I feel like this felt more like a Hellboy series. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't picked it up or are a huge Hellboy fan, I think this is worth picking up. This is the number 4 of 4. So just remember that to us at the end. And it's good. Even though the art is by Ben Stenbeck, it's right up there in the Mike Mignola verse.
Would you say it was published by Dark Horse Comics? Would you agree with that?
My God.
I wouldn't go that far, Alex. I wouldn't go that far.
Alex, don't you have to go call HBO Max and pitch him Survivor? Come on.
I mean, this is a good idea, guys. This is a $1 million idea.
It's money. Great.
Finally, I'd be able to pay back that guy who was painted red, who I made that deal with such a long time ago. I gave him so much money to do this podcast. It's insane.
Paint wet? Was it still wet? Because it feels like
it was
very
still
hastily.
Dripping all over his face. It was still dripping,
man.
If you would like to help me get out of this mess I've gotten myself into, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube.
Wait, is all the money going to your devil scheme? Is that what's
going
on?
We're wrapping up the podcast right now. We don't have time to talk about this.
No wonder we're all broke.
Gotta go. Devil calling me. Wants his money.
Be sure to subscribe. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok, and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, for Honey Baked, Spiral, and Bone In, this has been The Stack.
Great.